We've all got scars, some on the outside and some on the inside. But we can't be defined by our scars. I've spoken with some extraordinary people about how they've become empowered by their scars. This is I've Got Scars, baby.
Yes, you are here. We are here. I'm so excited.
I am too, baby.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so I am really excited to have you on the show. One, you're just an amazing person. I love your spirit. Today we're speaking with Dr. Tanji Scott. She is an incredible, physician to talk show host. I mean, you are a woman who speaks life. And I think that for me is so impactful, and it's really huge. It's really a big deal. And you're a woman of God and just has so many wonderful, beautiful things to say to people. When I first met you, I'm just going to say, I was like,
all right,
who is this woman? Like, I was like, Hoppo, who is this woman? Like, that was what it was.
It's so funny.
I said that because I was like, she has this like energy. She's effervescent. She just has this presence about her. Who is she? And so I'm so happy. Thank God for Jeannie. She connected us. And
yes.
I just said, okay, whatever's going on, let me connect with Dr. Tanji. And
amen.
That is what happened.
Amen. Thank you for that. That's a very nice thing to say. Thank you. Seriously, thank you. I felt the very same way about you when I first met you.
Aww.
I really did. I'm like, I've got to get to know this woman. If anyone can be as vulnerable and come out and say, you know what, I've got some scars. And you're like, okay, but you're so beautiful. What do you mean you got scars?
I wanted to bring you on the show because, you know, like I said, you have your own radio show. You're speaking life to people. You're interviewing guests. You are going through things with them. I've seen the effervescence. I've seen, you know, this woman that is so, just so powerful. But it hasn't always been that way. And to look at you now, I would think, oh yeah, she had it together her whole life. So let's talk. All right.
When I was actively practicing, I practiced in the field of obstetrics gynecology. Internal medicine now is what I'm doing because I have a home health agency that we see geriatrics. So anything elderly, all things elderly is what I do.
Okay. Awesome. So you are...
Thank you.
You're working with our elders. You are caring for people. This is the work that you do. But like I said, it hasn't always been the smooth ride that it seems to be at this moment. So let's go back. Go back to what things were. We're going to be talking about the journey towards self-love. And, you know, I think personally for me, the journey towards self-love has been a doozy, okay? It has been effort put in, okay?
Yes.
So what was going on for you? Is it a child? Did it start in childhood? Like what was happening in your life?
It has truly, and I'm glad you said that. First and foremost, I've got to say thank you so very much for allowing me the opportunity. Thank you for creating this platform for so many people that need to see it and hear it around the world. You are truly a blessing to people. And for that, I say thank you. How did this start? It started when I was a little girl, man. It started, I think, my first encounterance with me was that I can remember had to be about 5 years old. And I was introduced to God at 6. So I've had this love affair with him throughout my life. I kid you not. I wanted to know, who is this God that my mama and my grandmama talk about and my Aunt Laura is talking about? So that's how it really began. That journey to self-love was then knowing that, man, so I'm reading that he's my daddy. really? He's my dad? So mm-hmm. I love him. That's how it started. Seriously.
Okay.
Yeah.
So yeah. In there though, I know that you've had some hiccups.
Yes.
You know,
you want to talk about the good stuff.
Oh, we're gonna go there. That's what we do on this show.
I was hoping.
Because we gotta let them know. We gotta let them, because here's the thing. Yeah. You know, here's the thing. It's one thing to see a person after they've gone through certain healing, after yes. they, when they're on stage in the spotlight yes. and people yes. are like, wow, you're amazing.
Yes.
But when they're not on stage, when they're in the back somewhere, when they've gone through some trauma and turmoil and all yes. of that, you know, that's a whole different situation. Right. I did an interview with vegan influencer Tabitha Brown, and one of the things that she said,
I love her.
Oh, she's amazing. Literally, like, beautiful spirit.
Really,
beautiful really. Spirit. And wonderful. And that was the thing, is that, yeah, you see her now, and you're like,
yeah.
oh, okay,
yeah.
you just been like this your whole life.
Right.
And she's like, y'all don't understand.
Mm-mm. Mm-mm. No.
This
no.
role was not easy. So no. I definitely want to hear you. In your experience,
okay.
Where were the hiccups? What was going
okay.
on?
Okay. Since we're going all the way back, I was born in Mississippi. I was born in the projects. Well, I was born out right outside of the projects, but we quickly moved to the projects when I was a little person. Mm-hmm. And I was born to a mom that was 15 years old. Can you imagine? Yeah, my dad was 37 and married with 4 children. And he was this big, big guy in Mississippi who had land and houses and cars. I guess my affinity for cars is because of my dad, right? Mm-hmm. But I was born in that chaotic state. And for a very, very long time, I didn't know who he was because, again, he was married. And I'm assuming that my mom kind of wanted to make certain that he didn't, you know, get penalized for yeah. back in the day. I mean, that's now called statutory rape. Yeah. But back then it was, you know, let's kind of hide it. Mm-hmm. And it was chaotic, but it was, she never made me feel like I was less than. So mm-hmm. it was her telling me that she loved me, and then me telling me that I love me, but that longing of wanting to belong mm-hmm. was there, you know? Mm-hmm. And it was, I was in Head Start. So shout out to all of those who believe that Head Start is not a good place for mm-hmm. children. I beg to differ. I am a product of Head Start.
Yeah.
I remember sleeping, pretending like I was asleep on my mat one day. Mm-hmm. And this teacher says, now mind you, be careful what you say around children because you can shape them. You really can. Mm-hmm. The teacher says to another teacher, huh, look at her. You know that's Joe Fenton's daughter, right? And I didn't know who Joe Fenton was. You didn't say Annie Brown. Annie Brown's my mom and dad. What are you saying, you know?
Yeah.
So here I am, 5 years old, and I'm crying because Annie and I, and she, I call her Annie, I should call her mom, but Annie and I were close, you know, mm-hmm. she's like my protector. So I'm getting out of the station wagon because we didn't have buses back then. We had little station wagons, getting out of the station wagon, running to our apartment. And I asked this woman that for up to that time, mm-hmm. it was just she and I. So who is this Joe Fenton that this teacher is telling me is my daddy, you know, or yeah. telling another teacher. Yeah. And I'll never forget the tears and the anguish and the yelling that my mom did, wailing rather. She cried so hard and I was like, my God, I don't want to make her cry. I just want to know who this man is. Wow. And through her sobbing, she said, because she calls me Pootie, she said, Pootie, he's your daddy. And I'm like, but I thought you were my daddy. No, so now here I am at 5 thinking, well, if he's my dad, why is he here?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
All of my other girlfriends had a mom and dad in their home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's wrong with me?
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was her over and over and over telling me how beautiful I was and how smart I was and how she expected me to do great things. So there again lies, I got to know, who am I? Mm-hmm. Who am I? You know, I just, yeah, that was my question. Who am I? Huh. Isn't that something for a five-year-old to go through?
Yeah.
And then all of those years, seeing this man, because he would oftentimes come down, you know, I say down because he lived maybe a mile from us.
Okay.
So all of this time, this man would drive his Corvette and his Stingrays and his Lincoln Continentals and El Caminos. And I'm thinking, wow, that's my daddy. So when he would come over to visit her, well, he didn't really say a lot to me, you know, hey, how are you? But I look just like him. And I'm thinking, but we look alike. Wow, we look alike, you know.
Yeah. And how did he treat you? Like, was it just, did he acknowledge and say to you, hey, I'm your dad? Like, what, did you get that?
No, no. Mm. He'd say, hi, how you doing? Mm. You want a piece of gum?
Wow.
Wow. You know, I'm laughing now, but it, you know, that was pretty traumatic. It was, if you stop to think about it. So fast forward just a few years and I finally get to go down to his home now.
Yeah.
And I get to ride the bus, you know, I'm like, what, fourth grade? I get to ride the bus down to his home because on Fridays, sometimes my mom would let me spend the night. And I could, when I got off the bus, I could feel my heart beating really fast because I'm about to go in this mansion. This man has a mansion and he's my daddy. Still, you're my daughter. I love you. None of that. None of that.
So, okay. So you actually went down. He was still married. So at that time, no, they knew?
No, his wife, glad you asked that question. Thank you. Yeah. His wife was killed right in front of their home. Oh, rumor has it that my dad was, you know, kind of messing around and the husband caught wind of it and thought it was my dad in the car. He literally ran this woman off the road and she was killed right in front of her home. So at that time, prior to my being able to go down there, she knew that rumor had it that her husband had gotten a baby by this young girl. Mm-hmm. And she did her homework and found out who the mother was. And I was told that she came and picked my mom and I up, took us down to her house, their home, and said to her children in front of her husband and my grandmother that this is your sister. She is innocent in all of this. This is her mother. Even though I don't like what happened, I'm going to respect the fact that this is our baby. Wow. And we're going to love her and you're not going to mistreat her. And I wish that she had etched that in a couple of her children's forehead because they didn't get the memo. Yeah. And for years and years, I was mistreated by them at that house. And I didn't tell my mom because I wanted to continue going down there. It was something, it's something about family, you know, it's just, and I'm real big on family now. I do counseling with couples or what have you, getting ready to officiate another wedding. They're coming from Mississippi out here. So I get to officiate. So I said all that to say, it's just, I guess that journey to self-love was started. It had begun, and of course, I didn't know that that journey would take me here.
Wow. So you're in this situation where you're like, okay, I have siblings who aren't necessarily very nice to me. I was born into a situation that wasn't necessarily ideal. And so how did that really affect your self-esteem?
Oh, honey, I didn't know the ramifications of that effect until years and years later after I was going into young adulthood. it affected it so much because I kept thinking that something's wrong with me. It's got to be wrong with me. I mean, this, my mom says I'm beautiful and I'm smart and she wants me to do great things, but this man is not, there's no validation there.
Yeah.
So I found myself at some point, and I got to be open, honest, and sincere here because that's how I want to be presented. That is who I am. I found myself being very promiscuous. Looking in the mirror, saying, yeah, I am beautiful and I'm smart, but needing that person who would kind of juxtapose as my daddy to tell me how beautiful and how smart you are. Yeah. So I would caution anybody who's listening, seriously, there's nothing that we can do about what happened in our past, and we're not our past. We need those past experience to kind of, you know, what not to do in life. Mm-hmm. But please grow to love you. Grow to love everything about you. Yeah. Everything. Seriously. Yeah.
What you say that you were going through a period of promiscuity.
Yes.
And you were looking for validation.
Yes.
How in that time did you get married? Did you have a family of your own? What kind of did you have any scary experiences in particular?
Yes. Yes, I did. The promiscuousness came after the molestation and rape. I was raped at 12. Was I 12? Yeah, 1982. Yeah, 12 years old. And for a period of time, I did not tell my mom. I did not tell anyone. And when I finally told someone, and I'm assuming that the young girl probably thought that she was doing something to help me, she went and told a couple of more people. And those couple of more people went and told my mother. And I love my mom to pieces. But I understand when you're hurt, when you're disappointed, when something has happened to one of your children and you can't do anything about it at that time to protect them, her only recourse was to, I think she got a broom handle and she whacked me with it. And I'm thinking,
but you were the victim.
I was the victim. So it was a double whammy. And I remember the kids looking in the window, laughing. A couple of them were laughing, you know, and Brian ain't got no business beating that girl like that. You know how people, little girls, little people talk.
Yeah.
But for years and years and years, Audra, I was so hurt. I was so disappointed. I had for years thought that it was my fault. It was something that maybe I did. I don't know, but for years and years, I thought it was my fault.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you had that experience, and I would imagine that would have sent you back into an even darker place.
It tried.
Okay.
It tried to. And I say that because I am a proponent of talking to yourself. And I know it sounds just ludicrous at a young age. What do you mean talking to yourself? Because I kept saying, when I grow up, I'm going to do this. When I grow up, I'm going to go to med school. When I grow up, I'm going to be an actress. When I grow up, I'm going to travel the world. So I kept saying that over and over and over, no matter what I was going through, even at that young age. I tried to excel in school, and I did okay in school. I was your AB student. The likability factor was really important to me because I wanted people to like me. I really did. I wanted them to say nice things so that place that hurt so bad wouldn't hurt so bad.
Yeah.
Does that make any sense?
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So, I just have to say, you never know how deep the well is.
Yeah.
Like on the surface, it's like, oh, it's just a well. And then it's like, okay, it goes down deep. And,
it does.
You know, it's that iceberg effect.
Yes, absolutely.
So moving forward, as you got older in dating, especially, you know, a lot of women have experienced sexual trauma. A lot of women, you know, didn't have their fathers to say, I love you. And so as you get older and you move into dating and you want to get married and you want to have a family of your own or relationships, how was that for you? How was that experience?
My dating was, is this the one who's going to rescue me? Is this the one who's going to help me realize that, you know, going to med school is something and being an actress is something? Is this the one? So I didn't do a lot of dating, but I did a lot of, I guess, dreaming, if that makes any sense. I'd be with a person and dream that this is the person, you know, only to discover that, no, he's not the person. He's not validating me now. No validation now. But I got married. Well, I had my first baby. I got pregnant at 15. I had my first baby at 16. So there goes my nomination for the Air Force Academy. I really wanted to go to the Air Force Academy, but in 1987, they were not accepting cadets that were pregnant or who had children at that time. I think things have changed now. But so I kind of threw caution to that and said, all right, I'll just hit it really hard in school. And now that I'm pregnant, of course, everyone kept thinking, Tanji Brown pregnant? Oh, man, she could have been. Or, you know, and I remember the teachers, it was a couple of teachers that didn't look like me. They had blonde hair and blue eyes. And they said to me, you need to follow exactly what you said you're going to do. Now, you know, because they had been talking, you know, you go to ninth grade, they talk, the 10th grade teachers talk. I skipped a year in high school, graduated a year early and said, okay, I'm going to do it. Here I am with this kid on my hip, right? Thinking that, okay, I'm going to do it. And failed miserably. Had enrolled in college. And for whatever reason, I was just not settled. And I still don't understand. Why didn't you just finish? And it wasn't until many, many years later, I'm now, you know, in college with three children and going to med school. So it's just,
And so in these relationships, because I know you said you went through a period of promiscuity and you were just kind of just trying to, just looking for validation. In essence. So were the fathers, were they, or father, or I don't know, were they active in the children's life? Were you a single mother at this time or how was that experience?
I was a single mom with my first daughter, Ty. I still lived at home. And after Ty was born, she was born with a congenital heart disease. So imagine me at 16 having to go to a hospital that is going to perform open heart surgery on your baby at 3 months old, you know, and I'm 16 and I'm like, oh, dear God, what is this? And my mom gave me this Bible, the Living Bible. And I read that Bible from cover to cover, cover to cover, cover to cover. And every now and again, I would see something that looked like me in there. And I remember these nurses saying to me, you know, you can't stop, right? And I'm looking at, these ladies didn't know me. I'm yes ma'am and then no ma'aming. And she said, this one particular Gloria, she said, there are so many little girls, and I say little girls because they're little girls that have babies and they just drop them off at the hospital. She said, but baby, I've seen you every day going into that NICU, holding your baby, and I see you with your Bible, and you know, I wasn't doing anything for a show. I was going back to that place that gave me that foundation and that support, which was the Word. I've been reading the Word since I was 6 years old, so I knew that the Word worked, you know? So that was baby number one. Baby number two comes at 19, and this time I'm running. I am literally running. I picked up, ran to Texas, Houston, Texas, thinking that, okay, I'm gonna live out here, I'm gonna do fine. And I wanted to have an abortion with this baby. Got ready to get on the table, back in the you know, in the clinic, mm-hmm. and the nurse comes in and she says to me, "I'm so sorry, baby, but you're too far gone." And I'm thinking, oh, dear God, you've got to be kidding me.
Oh, wow. Wow.
So that was maybe number two. And you're in this small town, and you know you know there's something that's in you that your mama said, you know. Mm-hmm. I remember asking her at 10, can I go to med school? And her saying to me, do you believe in God? And I said, yes, ma'am. She says, then Pudi, you can do anything you put your mind to. Yeah. So even though I was going through relationship after relationship, trying to find that validation, yeah. it was something in the back of my mind, wow. my heart, that said, you can do anything you put your mind to if you believe in God.
Yeah.
So yeah. I made up my mind, fast forward. I made up my mind that for the rest of my life, I'm going to live my life and give what I want to receive. So mm-hmm. when you see me smiling, yes. it's not a fake smile. It's real. When you see me saying, man, I love you so much. I really do. Because I ask him, would you show me who you are? Would you please show me how to love people right where they are so I won't hurt them? Mm. So even though I what I thought was a mockery of everything and relationships, I rededicated myself back to him.
Yeah.
And it was like deliverance came, and I no longer care about what people say, you know?
Yeah, because I was actually going to ask you, you have your first child at 15, your second mm-hmm. at 19, mm-hmm. and
third at 21. Okay.
And then the third at 21. And I would imagine people are like just counting you out at that point.
Oh, they did.
And I imagine you might have felt guilty. There could be uh-huh. shame there. Uh-huh. Like, mm-hmm. how are you feeling during that process? Because you're looking for validation, right. and you're not getting the validation that you necessarily want.
Right. I began to write. I love keeping a diary. Back then, they call them diaries. I don't know if they do diaries anymore. They do journals now. But I would keep a diary, and I would write. I mean, just write. My imagination was just so vivid, you know? Mm-hmm. And I would just keep telling myself over and over and over, I love you, I love you, I love you. Man, I love you so much. Man, I love, because the kids and, you know, kids can be so mean sometimes. Yeah. But for a long time, I thought I was so ugly. I thought I was the ugliest thing in the world. I kid you not.
Oh, my God.
Because they said how big my nose was. They said how big my teeth were. They said how big my ears were, my hands. And I would always tell people, oh, these hands are going to deliver babies, you know. And these teeth wow. got to be big, because when I smile, people got to know that I mean it, you know.
Wow.
So I would kind of come up with these little things to get through all of that. My mom had her own thing going.
So you were affirming yourself. The whole concept yes. of writing affirmations, you were actually doing this. And what sparked you to do that? Because not everybody resorts to that. Some people, and I'll just talk about myself, some people just believe what they hear from the outside world. So for you, what actually said, no, we're going to do something different? Was it because you were in the Word and you just felt like, I'm going to do what this says, I'm going to believe this? Or was it just placed upon your spirit to just kind of say, you know what, I'm going to affirm myself daily?
I would have to answer all of the above. Mm. Because no one was actually telling me this, right? Mm-hmm. But when I wrote it, I was telling me this. So the more I wrote it, the more I kept thinking, man, okay. Even though the baby's crying, I've got this kid right here and I got this other one right here, I'm still writing. Yes. Wow. If that makes any sense. I just knew that this is not how the story was going to end. It Ooh. Couldn't end like this.
Oh,
because I haven't won. I didn't win yet. No, I'm so serious. It couldn't end like that. And if you're going through anything in life, and I mean this from the purest place, which is my heart. Mm-hmm. If you are reading, and this is what I read every day. Mm-hmm. If you're studying, if you're reading that and you're studying that, seriously, and you're writing, and you know his voice because I got introduced to him at such a young age. Mm-hmm. What they were saying wasn't, it didn't match. Yeah. So I'd rather believe something that's written, like everybody reads it. At that time, I'm thinking everybody reads it, right? Yeah. It wasn't lining up, Audra. It just didn't make sense to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so interesting. And I'm so glad that you said that. A part of the work that I do when I do workshops is I'll do like an exercise with someone and I'll say, like, if they're having issues with self-esteem or they're like, I don't think I can do this or whatever, I'll just say, yeah, I mean, because you're not very attractive and you're not very smart. So why would you do anything well? Why would you succeed? Like, you kind of suck.
I love that.
And here's the interesting part.
Okay.
Anytime I say that, like, the person in, like, it's like they don't even think about it. It doesn't register. They just get defensive and ain't like,
yep. Yep.
What did you say to me?
Yeah.
And I said, there it is. Right there.
That's it. Oh, I like that.
If you actually believed that you weren't worthy, you weren't attractive, you weren't beautiful and capable and all of these good things, mm-hmm. if you didn't believe that, if you felt like you were truly ugly, you wouldn't have been mad at what I just said to you.
Absolutely.
If you felt like you were worthless, you wouldn't have been angry. You just would have
absolutely
said, okay.
Yep.
So
yep.
I find that so fascinating.
Wow.
And I'm so glad that you had that experience. You're like, wait a minute, this is not add up, because my story is not supposed to end like this.
No, absolutely not. I mean, I was talking to Ty. Ty is among one of my best friends, my daughter, right? And I was telling her, I said, you know, when I was a little girl, I remember sitting outdoors, sitting on the curb. Mm-hmm. And I remember telling anybody that would listen, one day I'm going to grow up and I'm going to be a medical doctor and I'm going to be an actress and then I'm going to travel the world and I'm going to do this and do that. And they believed it. Everybody that I would say it to believed it. And I'm like, okay, all right. And then I would say something like, and you can do it too. At 12, at 13, right?
Yes.
That which tried to come and kill and steal and destroy me, it couldn't. He yeah. wouldn't let it.
Yeah.
He just wouldn't let it. You would think at 12 years old, you're raped.
Yeah.
What? You?
Yeah.
No. You tried, but you couldn't.
So what did you do with that experience? For those people who are like, I've had that experience. If they said, I've had that experience, and I can't sleep at night, I can't seem to let it go, I try to get rid of it somehow, but all I find myself doing is coping, or you know, they're from drugs to more promiscuity or whatever the case may be. I mean, not necessarily more promiscuity, but just promiscuity, or I just shy away from people and don't talk to people at all. What do you say to that person that just can't seem to see the other side of it, to see past it?
Well, there's several things that I would say. First and foremost, I would honestly say, it's okay to seek outside help. There's a taboo in our community that says, if you pray about it, that's really all you have to do. I just believe. Mm-hmm. I'm a proponent of praying. Oh my God. I throughout the day. And
yeah.
when I'm, you know, anxious to call somebody or text someone, I do it. I stop what I'm doing and do it right then, because that's important. They're going through something. They need that word right there.
Yeah.
But I would have to say, prayer really does change things. Prayer, it just does. And it's not predicated on anything other than you believe who you're praying to.
Yeah.
You believe that that person you're praying to can do exceeding abundantly above mm-hmm. what you're praying for. And mm-hmm. then you play a part too, because you got to choose to believe. That I've been in some dark crevices and it hurt. Mm-hmm. And I've cried and I've wailed and I've screamed and I've kicked and I've screamed some more. But I have to go back to, there are 66 books, 66 chapters in a book that I have grown to love. And mm-hmm. that book is more important than pretty much any other book I've ever read, including the one I'm writing for myself. Mm-hmm. That book tells me that I can. It tells me that I can. It tells me that I can. So you're going to have to fill yourself up. You're going to have to build yourself up. Mm-hmm. You got to fill yourself up. And the only truth to that feeling is go back to the manufacturer. Go back to the one who made you. Mm-hmm. Go back to the one that created you and ask him, what is it that you see about me? There mm-hmm. are five questions that you have to answer before you leave this earth. You got to answer those questions. Who am I? Where am I from? Mm-hmm. What can I do? What's my purpose? And what's my destiny? Mm-hmm. And if you can answer those five questions, you, my friend, are living a life that other people can only dream about.
I love
and
that.
And then it's up to you to go back and teach those other folks how to answer those questions about themselves.
I love that. And I love that you were saying, it's okay to get assistance. Mm-hmm. I love that part of it. Like, it's okay if you feel overwhelmed and you're like, okay, I don't know if I can just handle all of this on my own. Let me get some assistance. But I love that you're like, look, at the end of the day, you're going to have to build yourself up.
You really are. You really are.
And honestly, that was my experience as well. And I believe that I'm seeing it more and more and more now, is that there's literally nothing outside of you that's going to do it for you.
Amen.
That is something that I have experienced personally. It really, truly is about your level of belief. Like, whatever you believe, it is done for you. And it has nothing to do, because there are some people that are like, hey, I'm not really religious. I don't have...
Me either. Religious. And I don't even want to be around religious people. They scare me, because I used to be. I don't want to...
Some people are like, yo, I don't... You know, maybe they don't subscribe to certain things or whatnot.
Okay.
But
okay.
For those people that, you know, maybe they feel that way, my thing is that belief is belief. And if you, like, whatever you think in your mind, whatever you is going on inside of you will be done outside of you.
It will.
At the end of the day.
It will. So, because we live from the inside out, not from the outside in.
Yeah. So you gotta, like, whatever's going on inside, you're gonna see it on the outside of you.
Absolutely.
That is, that's a universal law at the end of the day.
Absolutely, at the end of the day.
It just is what it is. So
it is.
You gotta, that means you have to do the work to build whatever's going on within you so that so that outside of you, it's something, it's more in alignment with the truth of who you are and what
absolutely.
I just want to put that out there in case there's someone that's like, well, I don't, you know, it's very practical. This is
it
very
is practical.
Practical.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
So, okay. So, wow. Building yourself, rebuilding yourself through all that you've had to do that work.
Yeah.
How do you feel like, well, you know what, before we even get there, I want to know, because your life now, as far as, you know, at 21, you had your third child, mm-hmm. and you went through tumultuous relationships, but mm-hmm. right now, today, as it stands, you are a happily married woman.
Yeah, you see me sitting up straight.
I see. Right? She's like, oh yes, nah.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about that. Let's talk about how you reconcile the what was happening before, mm-hmm. how you kind of whatever wonderful goodness that took place to heal whatever needed to be healed, so that you can be in a space to receive a blessed, loving relationship. How did that transition work?
I'm so glad you asked that question. In the spirit of all things honest, I actually was in a relationship. I was in a relationship when I met my husband, and it was a relationship that I had no business being in. And I'll save the juicy details for the book. Okay. How did I get here? Let's just say that this individual was married and I knew better. Mm-hmm. And I met this bald-headed man at a traffic light. I was actually living in Atlanta, finishing up my internship over at Atlanta Medical Center and Grady Memorial Hospital, on my way to get my son some cell phones, on the phone with a young lady who, I think I was doing paralegal work, and she said to me one day, "You're so beautiful, but you curse like a sailor." And I'm like, "Ooh, that's no beauty in that." So she fastly became my friend. I'm on the phone now, on the phone with her, about to pray. I look to my right, the bald head man with beautiful teeth and, you know, at the traffic light, and I tell her, "Hold on 1 second." And I told my son, "Let the window down." My oldest son was in the back. I had this big Expedition. I like big cars and big trucks. And he said, "Oh, please, please, Ma, don't do it. Please, please." I'm like, "Shut up." You know, I said, "Excuse me, sir. You are so handsome." And he said to me, "Why, thank you." Didn't know that, you know, later on he'd be my husband. But wow. I remember when I said to him, he said, "Well, you know, are you dating someone?" And I said, sort of kind of an arrangement, you know, but he says, "I tell you what, I like you. I really like you. I think you're beautiful. I think you're smart. You know, you've got these wonderful children." He had met the kids. He said, "But I don't want to share you. And I'll give you 3 months to get it together. And if you don't have it together by July 4th, I'm going to bow out gracefully." I kid you not. True story. And I knew then he's the one. Wow. He's the one, because no one else made me think. They made me feel.
And but yes. Other people made you feel. Okay.
Yes. Yes. He made me think. He would always tell me what I could do. He would always tell me that, you know, "You're being in business for yourself is going to be great because you can have freedom. You have freedom." Because I had honestly put my business on the shelf. Mind you, well, you don't know this, but I went bankrupt. I lost my first husband. I lost cars. I lost credibility. So I didn't want to do business anymore. Are you kidding me? I'll just go to med school, deliver some babies, and make about $200,000-$300,000, and I'll be fine, you know. Mm-hmm. But God has another way of doing things. He always has your plans, his plans.
Wow. So yeah. So he was not only looking at you as the woman that he found physically attractive, he wasn't just looking at you as a potential person mm-hmm. to date. Mm-hmm. He was actually also looking at the totality of you and your life and what you're mm-hmm. doing with your career.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. He said to me, I'll never forget, he said, "You have what's called scattered energy." I said, "Huh?" He said, "I hear you say all these things that you used to do, and then I hear you say what you want to do, but you just don't do it. Mm. Your energy is so scattered. Why don't you start your business all over again?" And I'm looking at this man like, "You don't even understand. Didn't I just tell you I went broke? Didn't I tell you that I had nothing?" You know, but he was in business for himself. Mm-hmm. And I'm so glad, God, I'm so grateful to God. You have no earthly idea. I didn't know that he was what I needed. Mm. He was what I needed. Sometimes we as women, we as, you know, breadwinners, and we as, you know, women and physician and what have you, all that craziness, it's just foolish, because all it, I have a title. I'm a medical doctor. I have a title. It means that I serve. It means that I serve on a higher level. Mm-hmm. But it does not mean that I'm better than anyone. It doesn't.
Yeah. And so, yeah, go ahead, please.
With him.
Yes.
He makes me a better person. He makes me a better person. Even now, 15 years later, I still get chill bumps when I think about him, because he doesn't make a show of anything. He's always pushing me. He's always telling, even now, telling me what I can do. And I really like him. I love him by default, because I have the love of Christ. So that's a given. But there's nowhere in those 66 books that tell me I have to like anybody.
Yeah.
So liking someone is really important. I used to tell my children all the time, we were in med school because they went to med school with me. Mm-hmm. Man, I don't like you right now. I just don't like you right now. So it was always a thing of, let's get mom to like us. She loves us because she provides, but let's get mom to like us.
Wow.
Same thing with him. I like him so much that we work together every day, and still he drops nuggets. And when I don't want to hear it, I'm like, you know what? I really don't want to hear that right now. And I just the other day had to go and say, I apologize, because I did not represent who I was supposed to have represented to you. So you never get to the point where you can't say, I'm sorry. You gotta say, I'm sorry. What good is it that everybody else out there like me or love me or say these wonderful accolades about me, but the people in my home don't even want to be around me? That makes me a hypocrite. I've been that before, and I don't want to be a hypocrite anymore.
Wow.
I don't.
Wow.
So every single moment I'm examining my heart. Did you say that right? Did you make them feel some kind of way? Did you?
Yeah.
I'm exhausted by the time I go to bed.
Here's the thing. I'm so glad that you said what you said, because a lot of times you think a relationship is just supposed to, like, what is a relationship really supposed to do or be about? You know, you get into this situation and it's just like, oh, okay, yeah, you know, he likes me, he says nice things and blah, 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 blah. But if you're going to be with someone for the rest of your life, it's like they have to sew into you, and they have to see the truth of who you are. And
absolutely,
if you are stagnating, if you are not living up to your greatest potential, they're going to call that out.
And vice versa. Because if you're not together, You can't call out in him. See, we as women in relationships, we're supposed to ask that man that we're, you know, married to or involved with, what did God show you? What did he impregnate you with so I can help you with it? That's our role. We do that as women. We do that. And some people will say, well, that doesn't benefit you. If you know who you are, it does. Because when he's in position the way he's supposed to be, baby, by default, you're going to get in position. Because that man is going to be so focused on loving you like Christ loves the church, on getting that out that God gave to him to give to the world. It's like the virtuous woman in Proverbs. She gets up early in the morning and she goes and she buys a land, and she's a businesswoman. So she got people that work under her, and she's so good to her man, her husband, that the old folk in the gate are bragging on her husband. And when they brag on him, you're a reflection. You're a mirror of your husband.
Wow. No. Like, that's a big deal.
It's a big deal.
How do you feel your past experience has assisted you in your relationship, in your marriage?
What not to do in relationships. That's how it assists me.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily have to remember everything that happened. Yeah. I just need to remember the lessons.
Yeah.
Where was I when I thought I was just so needy? Then I was, you know, if I'm looking at it from that perspective, my promiscuousness, I was just saying, I need God. I need to be in a relationship with you, Dad, not with them. Because this stuff is just physical stuff. Yeah. You want you live, I would tell anyone, live the spirit. If God is in you, right? Mm-hmm. The Holy Spirit lives in you, then live from your spirit. Man has three dimensions. We are spirit, soul, and body. Get out of body so much. Yeah, you want to be healthy. You want to make sure you look good in your clothes. I get it. Mm-hmm. But what about your spirit? Mm. What about your soul? What's feeding your soul? What you're feeding your soul? Be careful what you eat and hear and see. Be careful who's around you. The people around you, honestly, we don't really choose people that are around us. We attract them. We do. If you're smiling and you're living life, and some people say to the highest frequency, I'm not really into frequencies, because frequencies are for sales. They're not for humans. Anyway, just honestly, Audra, just live the life, live your life as if it is your last day. I remember in 2009, when I rededicated myself to God and to life, there's a bishop that we were under in Atlanta. He's dead now, God rest his soul, Bishop Eddie Long. And Stacy and I were ministers of help in the church. And I remember him making a declaration one day and asking, if you knew that you had 6 months to live, how would you live your life? And that, my friend, was the precipice for me being the woman of God that I need to be. That was it right there. Yes, I'm 29 years cancer free. Yes, I, sustained, I came through being homeless, three times. But it was, what if this is, I've got 6 months to live. Have I really done what I'm supposed to do? Did I really hold the hands of a dying woman? Did I really tell as many people as I could how special they are? Did I go up to someone that I didn't know and say, can I buy you a cup of coffee? I try to keep about $20 on me, because that is how I live. If I see someone that needed it, it's done.
Yeah.
Even to policemen. I don't know how many times I've asked a policeman, can I buy you a cup of coffee? Or just, I roll the window down and say, thank you so much for serving. Yeah. Live that life, man. So you can just, when it's time for you to get your promotion, there'll be no regrets.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. It's when people say live, like, if it was the last 6 months, like, that's not something that you always hear if you go to like a church service or something like that. Mm-hmm. It's almost like, okay, live like this and make sure you're doing, you know what I'm saying? But the way you described it is, you're like, live big, go hard, love life, love yourself. Because what are you waiting on? You've already, part of what I like to talk about here is, like, you've already been through so much in your life. Every individual, you have been through so much, any type of trauma, pain, self-doubt, self-loathing, depression, anxiety, physical issues, and whatever. You've already been through so much.
Yeah.
When are you going to just say to yourself, you know what? I'm about to get out here and make this pop. I'm about to live on purpose and go hard.
Well, I'm glad you asked. I have just entered into a contractual agreement with a prominent entertainment company here in Los Angeles. Yeah. And we were talking billboards, and we're talking this, and we're talking schematics. And I'm sitting there in the meeting, Audra, and I'm trying to keep from crying, because for so long, I have tried to make certain that people understand that their lives are so important. Please live the life that you're supposed to live. Mm. Please, you know, start a relationship with him. Yes. I'm not asking for, you know, religion, just be in a relationship so you know his voice. So that he's got some secret things for you. Mm. And you'll never know those secret things if you don't get into a relationship.
Yeah.
So sitting there, and I'm thinking all those things that have happened, you know, and I've seen people that I've prayed for or fasted for, they come back and say, man, Dr. T, you don't even understand. God did this. One guy, bless his heart, I think he had come into a few million dollars after some prayer. And it was just a quick little snapshot of my life.
Yeah.
And then for one moment, seriously, last week, for one moment, sitting in that meeting, I'm thinking, do I really deserve to be here?
Mm.
Yeah. Because when you see, all of us have greatness in us because we've got our daddy's DNA.
Yes.
And
yes.
We got to look like our daddy. So my test has been, when I look in the mirror, I don't want to see me. I want to see him.
Mm-hmm.
What does he look like? Well, he tells you what he looks like. He's kind, he's patient, he's long-suffering, he's gentle, you know, he's meek, he's humble. So he tells you what he looked like. So those are the kind of fruit, the characteristics of the fruit of the Spirit that I want. Yeah. So, yeah.
Wow.
I'm not going to play small anymore.
Yeah. I'm so glad that you're saying that. And you're like you said, you're in this meeting, you're like, do I even deserve to be here? But it's like, well, obviously you do, otherwise you wouldn't be there. And and I think that's the thing. When you have a blessing, it's like, you know what?
Mm-hmm.
I am grateful for this time, this moment. I'm supposed to be here. This is my destiny.
Yeah.
And affirming, going back to what you said when you were writing stuff down in your diary.
I still do.
Yes. Affirming yourself. I think that is the work that goes into manifesting things that you know are inside of you, but it's going to only be able to be birthed into the world if you fully are in alignment with it, you trust it, you believe it, you know it.
You know it.
And we know that all things work together for the good of
you
those.
Better
you know what I'm saying?
It.
Like,
you better believe
when
it.
You know.
When you know that you know that you know.
Yes, and it doesn't matter what you've been through. It doesn't matter the shenanigans have tried to stop you or could have stopped you.
Absolutely, absolutely.
None of that matters.
None of it matters.
You then create the blueprint because the blueprint is already in you. You write the blueprint out, make it plain, and say,
come on now.
Okay, cool.
Come on.
Now this is
come
what
on.
I see. This
come
is what
on.
I see. And then here's, I love how this connects because, like I said, I was talking to Tabitha, and she—that's what it was. She was like, I just listened. I listened. I kept listening, and I moved in faith. And I said, okay.
Ooh, Jesus.
And I mean, when I tell you, it was incredible. Definitely watch that show.
I will.
It's powerful, but this is what I'm like. I'm feeling this energy here that's saying, step out of in the box thinking.
Move out of your way.
Yes.
Move.
Like there's a level of this. I recall someone saying that you're supposed to be moving on a sea in a sea. Type of energy. And what they meant by that is if you're moving in A energy, you're just like, all right, well, I just want a job that's comparable to the job that I have now, making the same amount of money, doing the same things, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
B energy is, you know what, I want a little bit of a raise, maybe, you know, an extra $5,000 a year or something like that. You know, a slight increase.
Mm-hmm.
But C energy is, you know what? I want the whole shebang. I want to make what I make annually, monthly. I don't know how I'm going to get there. It's that energy of, I don't know how this is going to happen, but this is a vision that I see for my life. And now I have to get in alignment with that. And getting in alignment with that, like you said, is affirming yourself.
Absolutely.
Not just believing, but knowing.
Knowing.
That you're here for a reason.
Yep.
Yep. And no need for me to doubt it.
Yep.
Like, let's go.
Let's go.
And I love this big energy. You're like, live like this is the last 6 months. You're going to be sitting there whistling Dixie. I'm not the people whistle Dixie. Right, that's the oldest thing that anybody I've ever said on this show. But it's okay. That's just who I am. So you're not going to just sit there like just kind of resting on your laurels. You're going to get out there and make it happen, make it pop, have energy, fun.
That's it.
Okay. Sorry.
You got to remember. No, I'm glad you did, because you have to remember that the end was made before the beginning.
Oh, you got to say it. But
it's written. Everything that I'm saying, I've learned from that book.
Wow.
I kid you not. So if he's already made my end before my beginning, if he tells me that my latter work is my latter greatness is greater than my beginning, that the end, it's done.
It's done.
I swear to you. I can't make it any plainer. Mm-hmm. He has already done the work. You got to, that positioning that you're talking about, you've got to be deployed into your future.
Yeah.
You can't be employed in your future. Mm-hmm. You got to be deployed. Deployed means that you're actively getting out there and doing it.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Gosh, become I'm so happy work. You said that. Become the work. I'm so happy that you said that. And just so people understand, like, I've literally lived that and experienced that. The concept of, like, I call it connecting the dots.
Mm-hmm.
The thing in my own life, this is what I've experienced. So at the beginning, the thing that I thought was the worst part about me burned it a year and a half. And I thought I was just ugly and terrible. It was the worst thing for me. And I felt like I would be okay if it wasn't for this. That literally is how I felt. So that I loathed this scar. So the funny part is that at 17, when I was going off to college, I was like, God, what do I really want to do? What do I really want to do? And I was like, you know what? I want to encourage people. It was either be a therapist or still stick in music and the arts and stuff. And I was like, you know, I want to encourage people through my music. I want to do that. And now, fast forward into my adulthood, years later, I write this song. Next thing you know, write my song Scars. And next thing you know, I'm doing the podcast. And I believe that I feel in my spirit that is the path that I'm supposed to be walking. And I'm just, walking in faith.
You're doing
so
it.
So who knows what the story
is. I know, right? Aren't you excited, though?
Yes, I am. But here's the funny part. The very thing that I thought was the worst part about me and was going to stop me from being and doing everything that I was purposed to do, the very thing that I hate most about myself is the very thing that I'm standing on. And the reason that I get to talk to you with your beautiful, wonderful self, that is the same thing. My scar is the same reason I'm here talking to you today.
How about that?
Yes. And I feel like that is the situation with people. That thing that you hated, that thing that made you feel worthless, that thing or that person that made you feel worthless, that experience that made you feel worthless is that thing that you can stand on.
Come on, baby. Come on.
Serve the world in a positive, beautiful way.
That's it.
And also nurture and nourish yourself through that experience.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So I just had to say that. Like, it's not rhetoric. It's not just random.
No, it's not.
This is real.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Tried and tested.
Yes.
Mother approved. God approved.
Absolutely. And so one last thing. Before the one last thing, I want to ask you specifically, how do you feel your scars, your past has served you as it pertains to being a medical doctor, but also your show, the Dr. Tanji Show. How do you feel that your life experience has served you in the work that you're doing now?
Thank you so very much for asking that question yet again. I thank God, seriously, for everything that he allowed me to go through. Mm-hmm. I thank him for the grace when I chose to do it and said, well, maybe it's God, you know, just missed that mark. Yeah. It has created for me a safe place. And I'm going to tell you why. The show is really designed for the people who may have gone through something and are saying, now, what do I do with all of this that I've gone through? The show is designed to kind of make certain that they know you're gifted, and your gift really does make room. So what's your gift? What's your product that you're bringing to market? Whatever that is, would you allow me to walk with you in that? And so we can tell everybody that this is who you are. It's not for me. It's more, I got to make certain that everyone that comes to that show or everyone who's listening and want to be a part of the show, understand that it's just not a show for numbers. It's a show for life. And if you're serious about what you're doing, then would you come? Would you answer that proverbial question, how did I get here? So that everything you've done up until the time you get on that show, you're living it, if it makes any sense. So that which I've gone through, that which it helped me to, okay, I'm going to make up my mind and I'm going to med school. I was 31 years old with three children when I went to medical school. So, you know, I remember the first day, one of the students asked, well, are you our new professor?
Hilarious.
And I said, no, man, I want what you're getting, I'm getting too. So to be honest with you, and I know it sounds just really crazy, but I don't think I would change a thing. Yeah. I really don't, because I know what it means when someone says, I've lost everything and I don't know what I'm going to do. I know what that feels like. I know what it feels like. I know what it feels like when a mother tells me, you know, my daughter's pregnant and, you know, she had this going and that going. And she still does, because that baby's going to give her that reason now to make sure she does it. You see? Yeah. So, no, I don't discount any of that.
Yeah.
I thank God for it. But I'm not the person who I was that was going through it.
Through that, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not her anymore. She's dead. What people say about me, I really don't care. Yeah. They say they like me, I say, wow, thank you. Glory be to God. If they say, I don't like you, thank you. Glory be to God. Yeah. So it doesn't matter. You know what matters, honestly? Honest to God is when I stand before this man and he's reading that laundry list of them things that got me in the book and the things that's going to get me in the other books. See, the other books, you know, I got my business fixed with the book. I got to make sure my business is fixed with the other books, because how you govern down here determines how you reign with him. And I'm not just talking heaven, because my heaven, I kind of create heaven on earth.
Yeah.
I'll be here for a minute. I might as well have a good time.
Okay.
I don't own anything, even these very pearls that my son presented. They're his. I just get to be a good steward over them. You don't own anything. You don't own anything. So when I realized that I didn't own anything, I mean, absolutely nothing, and that I am responsible for what he allows me to govern, it changed my whole perspective.
Wow.
Because you got to answer to him. Yeah. You do. People say, you know, God, I'd rather live my life if there, you know, as if there is a God, all right? And he's not into dogmatism. He's into freedom. He's into liberty. Than to live my life like I got it going on. It's me that's the doctor. Yeah. It's me that's with the house and the cars and the money. and then discover that there is a God. And you're not it. You're A, but not B.
Exactly. Now that's the realness right there.
Come on, bro.
But I'm glad that you actually said it that way, because there's still like the concept of governing something, the concept of being responsible.
Oh God, you have to.
With what you've been given, your gifts.
And well your time.
Your time. Exactly.
Yes, yes.
I think that that's huge. And a lot of people may, you know, they may not want to always think about it like that. But it's like you have so much, there's power. There's a lot. Like that's a lot.
Yeah.
and being a good steward over what you've been given is, you know, it takes a lot of confidence and fearlessness and boldness, all of that. Amen. It takes a lot of that. And I'm so glad that you're talking about that, because it's not always just the don't be sad, everything's gonna be okay. Sometimes it's like, hey, get out there.
You better.
You know what I'm saying? Like sometimes that's the energy that you need. That's the response.
You better believe it.
So what would you say to someone who is struggling right now in this moment with self-love? They are in a space where you once were, and they're like, look, I do believe that it is quite possible there's something on the other side of this, but at the same time, I'm not quite sure how to get there.
Okay. What would I say?
Yeah.
I'd start off just as simple. Can I call her Mary?
Yes. Yes.
Hey, Mary, this is Tanji, and I just want to tell you this, that I love you so very much, and that it matters that you were born. You've got something that you need to give to me, and it's not fair, Mary, that you keep that what you've got that's been given to you so freely, and you won't give it to me. I understand. I really may not know exactly where you are, but we probably got some similarities, okay? Let me give you just a little snippet. That's how I would start it. Let me give you a snippet of where I've been and where he's kind of brought me, you know, to. Mm-hmm. Would you make up your mind, please, baby? Would you give me exactly what he gave to you to give to me so I can give it to my family? See, you got it, and I need it. I don't want it, babe. I need it. Please, I need it. And as a matter of fact, I'll walk with you in it. Mm. I'll do that. How about that? Here's my number. You can call me. You call me anytime and I'll answer. But if you call me after 10 o'clock, it's real important. And I'm going to answer the phone. And then I'd tell her, I'm a believer. I'm a believer in Jesus the Christ. I'm a believer in God. I'm a believer in His Holy Spirit. If you would allow me to pray with you, He hears my voice and He hears yours too. But I want to stand with you in this right here. Let's make a difference. That's what I would tell her.
That's amazing. Dr. Tanji Scott.
Thank you, Jesus.
I am so grateful for you. I'm so grateful for your time. I'm so grateful for your beautiful energy and your spirit here.
Wow.
Because I believe that this is really powerful, and people need this. They need to know that they are amazing.
They are
powerful.
They are.
They are beautiful inside and out.
Yep.
They are worthy of great things.
Yep.
And I want people to know, hey, it's okay to remind yourself that you are worthy of those things. It is okay to be gentle with yourself.
Yeah.
And I am so, I'm so grateful for you sharing your story. Because you are an example of being able to have an experience that would be considered uncomfortable, unfavorable. And you can turn that, like we say, turn your scars into your superpower. That is what this is. This is a process of turning your scars into your superpower. So take these tools and use them, apply them to your life. You are amazing, incredible, worthy, all of that. So all thank that. You, Dr. Taji. I appreciate you. And yes, I mean, we just, you know, are you already I know. I'm going to be like, hey, girl.
I'd like that. Please.
Yes, please.
So, oh, Audra, I love
how
you.
How can they listen to your amazing show and, you know, connect with you on social media?
That would be absolutely wonderful. Thank you so, so very much. Man, I'm trying to keep from crying. I'm actually sitting on my hands here. I am on all social media platforms, whether it's Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, at Dr. Tonji Show. That's at DrTonGie Show. And Wednesdays at 2 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, I'm at LA Talk Radio on, of course, Dr. Tonji Show.
Awesome. Please check out the show. I'm not going to say your girl was on the show, but I was on the show.
Mm-hmm.
So even if you're like, I don't know, yes, go check it out. But I mean, you have a plethora of guests who are very powerful and who have amazing things to share. Yeah. And tap into those resources. Tap into those resources. You are incredible, walking in your purpose. And I'm excited to see your next levels and all of that.
Right? I know, right? Wow, okay. I'm so grateful.